I feel like a big deal. I'm the host. Great. If it could, Nashin Rivka, I knew that. Would you two be able to go around and just like introduce yourselves and state your name, pronouns, and just what like what your role in this project is?
Najee, do you want to go first? Do you want to go first?
I will support you in that. my name is Najee Syed Sirsi. I use any and all pronouns. I am originally from, I was born in Chicago, but I grew up in DeKalb, Illinois, and moved back in 2010. And since then have done a lot of different art, and more recently deeply exploring digital media and how we can incorporate community in our processes when thinking about arts and culture work and larger structural shifts in the world today. So my focus in the project has been in the digital media sphere, thinking through podcasting edits, working alongside the full team to help to produce the podcast component of the work, thinking through intellectual property rights. How can we rightfully and justly incorporate the amazing talent that is here in Chicago into this civic and cultural archive while providing ownership, while being in conversation with ongoing works of said community members? And also just as a cheerleader, I really love the work that Irina, Rivka, and Jay are doing, and especially all 50 folks or however many folks we land on that are receiving a portrait in an interview. These are very, very strategically selected people because they are so vital to the fabric of the arts and culture and of Chicago and how we approach civic engagement and do community work. So there's so many other things that are always unfolding, and I'm happy to join in that, but that's where I'm focused right now. And yeah, I'm gonna pass it over to Rivka. I hope I bought you enough time.
That was perfect. Do I even have to say anything? Hi, I'm Rivka, as you've all been pronouncing so beautifully. It's music to my ears. I'm from the Northwest suburbs, but my family, similar to Irina, is also from the Soviet Union. And so, I grew up and sort of kind of did the whole Rogers Park to Northwest suburbs migration, Chicago. And, I am basically, started as a transcriber, turned into a creative consultant, and also a cheerleader. Half of Najee and I's job is to tell Irina how amazing they are, so they believe it, because they are. As same with Irina and Najee, my belief in the world is that culture should be at the center of all political movements. The way we understand one another, the way we learn about history is, I think, best through ethnographies, through storytelling, obviously through interviews, conversations. It's exactly what this project is. It's a civic and cultural archive. Like, this is what people should be listening to in the future, 10 years from now, if they wanted to learn about what was going on with COVID, Black Lives Matter, uprisings, any type of social injustice. Like, these are the facts. This is what's actually happening. And so my role is, just making sure that this is getting across and that we make this into the project it's meant to be. But a huge part of my role is also literally transcribing the interviews. And so that's also been super fascinating, because I've been doing that since Irina started. So last year, it's been a year. It's crazy. So around, we just kind of started, just me and Irina, just like They would send me transcriptions or the recording. I would sit and I'd listen. I would transcribe them. I would, you know, and that was just kind of our little project. And then one day we were like, wait, what are we doing? This should be a full ass thing. And so that's where we're at now. But yeah, like similar to what Naji said, these people that are getting their portraits done are like so compelling and interesting and like artists themselves. And so part of the process is also like, genuinely getting excited about the amount of, like, this is what's been giving me hope throughout this entire like year of whatever. Like this project has reminded me that people are doing the work, and what we're set out to do is to highlight that hard work and remind people to continue being hopeful, because shit is happening. So yeah, that's my spiel.
Firstly, I know I'm not introducing myself, but there is one more member of our team who couldn't be here, so I did want to introduce them.
Oh, please.
And that is Jay, Seth, they, them pronouns. I just dropped a link to all of our lovely bios in our about section. Yes, Jay said we can only speak about them for 30 to 60 seconds or less. So I'll make it real short and sweet, but Jay is a queer Laotian and Vietnamese artist and graphic designer based in Chicago's Chinatown, and they are a creative partner of Rivka, working, they are the two halves of Hooligan Creatives and have also supported Hooligan Magazine, so they have a ton of experience in marketing, branding, social media, graphic design, and basically uplifting BIPOC, LGBTQ artists and organizers. So they are wonderful and amazing, and they couldn't be here today, but they are very much part of our team.
Thank you for giving me that heads up. I thought it was just the three of you until now. So that's a great clarification. So my biggest question is just, How are you, because like you've talked a lot about cultural archives, I was wondering how you hope to expand past, around and possibly past Arena's initial like purview of this into being what it can be, which is it seems very full and expansive potentially.
Well, I could speak to that in the sense that a lot of what we've been doing is we've been learning as we've been going. And I think that we're learning. I think the other day we all had this realization because I think what happened was you were figuring something out for the Hyde Park installation. And I think that they were like, oh, well, this isn't just a portrait series. Like at the time, a couple days ago we were calling it a portrait series, and now we're saying no, it's a cultural and civic archive, and that's much larger. And I think Irina said something that was like, this is something, yeah, emergent strategy, this is something that can be, this is like a lifetime of impactful, this is education for a lifetime. And that's kind of all of our, the beauty of this is that all of us see it so clearly that it makes it actually kind of easy. Because like, while we are figuring it out as we go, we're also on the same like wavelength, that anytime someone brings up something that's like, well, what if we did this or included this or tried this? We're like, yeah, that sounds great. And then like, it, I don't know if I'm making sense, but the fact that it's who's behind it all, and like the people, like all of us together with our backgrounds and kind of our value systems and all community guidelines that we've set up together, it makes it a lot smoother and easier and like enjoyable to create something like sustainable and like long term.
Hi Percy, would you mind repeating the question again?
Yeah, of course. How do you hope to expand past, on Arena's initial work and past it?
How do I look to expand on Arena's initial work and past it?
Yeah.
Please hold.
Well, thank you for all of this archival arena.
She's literally lives for the archive. Like, it's not even a joke. Arena, like, so captures the importance of critical moments and critical mass of, like, hey, we're in a global shift in global history and her story and our story. These are the moments that people reference when they build their curriculum, when they talk about world history, when they build policies and make structural change. These are the moments that people look to for art, culture, all of it. So I think that, you know, I think it also goes, and I think Arena may appreciate me saying this, but it goes beyond her. I think it is very much like, you know, her original work, as I saw it, was really elevating those that have a strong legacy to necessary change in the city of Chicago, especially when it comes to transformative and restorative justice, activism, civic engagement, youth work, intergenerational healing. There's a lot of different skill sets, identities, wisdoms that need to come to the center of our city in the way that we think about our present, analyze our past, and build our future. And so it then moves beyond her and becomes that emergent process of responding and building from a place of care that incorporates what we've learned. Like, if we're good at listening, the benefit and beauty of the podcast is that we literally listen to these conversations for hours and hours and hours, and we are transcribing and editing and communicating and ingraining and etching so much of the lived wisdom and experience of each of our community members that are reflected in this work, and the folks that they want to bring into the archive, and the nature and the other ancestries, indigeneities that they want to bring into the archive. So it becomes, I believe, in a future iteration, malignant. It becomes a type of mycelia, type of network that often, you know, or in days past would operate outside of the visibility of a larger system, such as our city government, larger agencies, larger organizations, where we are expanding a network that is grassroots, that is not concerned about the I'm trying to reform the way that I would talk about it, because I'm pretty gnarly with how I talk about stuff like this. But the elite eroticism of, you know, our communities. And I think that if we're doing good to Arena's initial plans and for this project, that it will help to strengthen ties and relationships and connections that are essential for us to radicalize our environments, to be one of care, to be one of transformed relationships, to be one of justice, to be one of equity, and to constantly have that be a moral compass for our city, and to really shift our municipal focus and our cultural lenses to the reality versus a projection of a fiscal budget, you know, whatever the other capitalist white supremacist frameworks insert here, replacing that space with something valuable and meaningful to the people who live here and who are affected by the city of Chicago.
Thank you. Really quick, I feel like it's such a phrase, can you clarify what you mean by elite eroticism? It doesn't have to be a long answer. I just really want to know this for me.
It just moved from spirit through my lips, so I will ask, please hold. Elite eroticism is like, oh, it's a conversation we've had since like European constructs of like the bourgeoisie, like the people who in a way perversing or sexualizing or objectifying real lives, real experiences, real cultures at the hands of the elite. Like you become a prop, you become a fixture, tokenization, all that, like elite eroticism. Like people, there's, you know, maybe a controversial artist that I should or should not bring up, but Gomez Pena recently did a talk on this, and it's like the curators who are just like getting turned on by the pain of marginalized folks, things like that. In art cultural institutions, you know, elite eroticism. You're not even, it's not a holistic connection, it's just utilitarian. It's like I want to extract because this gets me off.
It's indulgence for it's indulgence on other people's pain. That makes sense. Great. I mean, not great. That's horrible. But the oh, thank you. The so I had a better question that wasn't about elite eroticism, and then I got caught up on that one. What a mistake that was, you know. I have a question about because you both have been working on this for the past year, and I'm wondering like so we just passed the year in lockdown and we're nearing the anniversary of the George Floyd uprisings. And I'm kind of wondering how you feel this project has changed scope or scale and needs to adjust to the past year. And what has changed in terms in your own opinion in the last year, because it's been so much and there's so many things to take account for. And a question, but that's okay.
I know it's wild. Like I said, it started with Irina coming to me to be like, would you be interested in transcribing these portraits, these paintings that I'm doing? And at that point, I don't even know how many they had. I don't even it was like a lot already. And I was like, hell yeah, this sounds great. The Breonna Taylor murder was two days ago. That's time is I don't even know. But I just remember, you know, obviously agreeing because I trust anything Anita does. And I was listening, I started listening to these conversations, and I was like, oh my God, this is what people need to be listening to right now. And it's interesting because there's actually an intense shift, because there's some conversations that were during the time where it was just pandemic talk, like COVID, like, you know, kind of, I mean, there was obviously talk of systemic inequality, talk like this country because of how they're handling COVID, and like it was mostly specifically about that. But when June hit and the uprising started, that the conversation shifted, obviously. And it was in real time, which is the most fascinating part about this project, is that these conversations were happening in real time in reaction to like historic moments. And Irina was capturing it in these in and that's you can't get that anywhere else. Like that's kind of the that's what made all of us realize, like, oh, this needs to be preserved in a way that's much larger than just a website. It needs to be preserved in through audio. It needs to be preserved on a mural. And like, there's so many different things that we need to be doing to make sure that these conversations are archived in this way. Because again, like, this is that was history happening in real time. And then the people that Irina was talking to weren't just, you know, like policymakers or government officials or whoever. It was people that are like working on the inside, are artists themselves,
our community organizers, cultural organizers, have been on the inside and have been at the top of the inside and then left the inside because they were hurt by the inside. And so like these people who know what's going on, and they're sitting, some of them are sitting on these board meetings and they're trying to change shit and they can't. And like, these are the people who like, these are the people that don't show up on the news. And if they do, they're seen as like, because one of the people also was Aislinn Pulley from Black Lives Matter Chicago. Like Aislinn Pulley, I think, was on the news at one point talking. Yeah, many times. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen Aislinn on the news. always on the news, right? Yeah. But like getting this conversation with Aislinn in this way, because Irina has said, I'm not a journalist. I'm having a conversation over tea with my friend. Like, and they're telling me the inside scoop. Aislinn isn't on a camera for NBC News or whatever saying, here's, you know, on a prompt, you know, like saying these things that they need to say in order for people to listen. They're saying their heart and their soul and their truth to their friend. And like, that's a conversation you can't access on public news, on, you know, like, it's just not going to happen. And like, so what we learned was, as kind of going back to like what this project looked like at the beginning versus the way it kind of unveiled, was that we saw how big it could be. And obviously, because both Irina and Naji already work with the city of Chicago, they knew that this could become a Chicago specific project. And that's also like a big thing, was kind of deciding, because at first Irina was interviewing people from all over. And then it kind of became like, how can we actually make this a Chicago specific project? Because Chicago was also a big, I mean, it's a big city, and also like there were some monumental things happening here. And also you talked to people after the protest. It was like some of the most like police violence that you've witnessed, Irina. What was it called, when they took down the statue? Yeah, the Black Solidarity, yeah, the Black Indigenous Solidarity Action. I think you talked to Todd Palmer. I forgot. I have like it all in my head somewhere. I like see, like I'm so like, Naji was saying, like we're editing and transcribing, like we're very familiar. We're like so ingrained in these like conversations. Like I've memorized like so many of it. And I'm also like, my politics have become like better because of these conversations. So like, that's also what I think is kind of the beauty of this, is that this is like going to be free education for people to learn from people who are actually working within these you know, kind of like civic and cultural values, but also like for the city or like in adjacent to the city, whatever it is. But yeah, what I'm saying is that the interesting part is I remember listening to, yeah, I've never like, podcasts are obviously happening in real time and like we know that, but it's I've never listened to anything so intimate and so honest and so raw the way these are. And I think it's, yeah, I hope this answers your question. I think I went on a tangent just because I get so excited.
These questions are better answered if you go on a tangent, and I appreciate it. So we've mentioned that this is a very big project and that's slowly emerging. Are there any ideas of what to move on to after the podcast or in tangent with the podcast? I know Irina mentioned that you were hoping to potentially turn this into, I don't remember exactly, but there is an element of like, just like once you move it past Irina, you can start using these conversations as a tool for education. And I was wondering if there was anything other than like just the podcast in the works.
Yeah, I can answer that briefly. So we are partnering with Honeypot Performance. I'm going to just drop a link. And they are an Afro-diasporic feminist artist collective. that I have a relationship with, as does Naji. Their artistic director, Maida McNeil, is our good friend slash boss at the Park District. And she is partnering with the Department of Planning on an initiative called We Will Chicago. And it's the first major urban planning initiative that's happened in Chicago since 1966. And they are looking at seven different policy issues. So transportation, public health, education, housing, environmental justice, and the arts. And for each of those, they're gonna have a hub in the city that the portraits are gonna be installed at. And then there's gonna be, they're gonna be activated with live presentations and talks and workshops. And then there's also a micro grant project that is in the works to get young people creating portraits and conducting their own conversations. So it's not, everything is not filtered through me.
I would also like to highlight, I really love the work of the Knapp Ministry. I don't know if y'all are familiar with the Knapp Ministry, but they're really dope. And one of their things is like rest as liberation work. So I just want to highlight, I'm excited to rest after this and take like a moment, you know, throughout and afterwards to rest. Because, you know, we're working really hard, as is everyone who's involved in this work is working really hard. And I think that's something that would make me happy to see in the world, is rest built in to our work as a standard.
That's wonderful. I have no more explicit questions. I'm wondering if there's anything that is really exciting for you all that you just really wanted to share with me, that I just don't have the scope to ask a question about it.
Something that I do think is interesting about the work, like I said earlier in the beginning, about what we're doing and why it's so great, is that when we're kind of a small team, so it's four of us right now, we have designer, we have the content, whatever, social media plus transcriber, me, audio producer, Naji, Irina, the conversationalist, the grants writer, like many, many things. We all wear a lot of hats, right? But we, like, as we sent you these community values, I think something that's really interesting for me in working with this team is that we're really holding true to those values and checking in with each other. And like, kind of what, even going off sort of like the Knapp Ministry idea of rest, is that one of our values is rest. And like, something that I think is interesting is we're not just, you know, trying to, what we're creating is also mirroring how we're creating it. So like all of these conversations that we're listening to and engaging with, we're not just like, oh, this is great content, like throw it on the podcast. It's like, we're also learning from these people and learning how to adapt that into our work. And so whatever we create is really just what we've learned from everybody that we're highlighting. And I think that's kind of the beauty of it, because oftentimes, you know, like a lot of people just want to create art or create content or product so that, you know, it affects all these people, or that, you know, they their name gets big because of it, whatever it is. And for us, that really isn't our goal. And like, our goal is really to create one, a sustainable work practice with one another. Like, that's a huge goal for us. Like, this should be enjoyable and fun, which isn't a value for everybody, but it is for us. And it also is, our goal is to, again, like, it's to create a public education platform across the board, visually, sonically, and interactively in different ways, eventually with youth. So like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that the values that we preach or that we, you know, are advocating for are fully in practice in how we are with one another and in the work we're doing together behind the scenes, which I think is not always the case.
I just think it's cool. Can I say that? I just think it's cool. Because, like, we're staying in our lane. You know what I mean? It's a big thing. So many people and institutions are like, oh, let me pop over here, over there. It's like, no, Arena called up her friends. You know what I mean? Like, friends, colleagues, allies. Like, let me just call up the people in my lane. And I just think that doing that unapologetically will really, really shift our city. Because we all have so many unique connections. And I think that we should be in conversation with each other right now. In just open ways. Being vulnerable. Being transparent where we can, where it makes sense for us. Involving young people. Involving old people. That's one thing I'm excited about is elders. There are some elders in this project. And I'm just like, finally, like, I got real passion on the inside. I don't even know if I shared this with the group. But I've just been talking to my grandparents and my godmother and my elders. And I'm like, y'all are still here. Like, can we just talk about that? Like, you know, so many times we do projects in this arts and culture world. And, like, it's always about the young people, you know, and it's, like, it's everybody. It's not about just one group. It's literally everyone. There are mothers, aunties, uncles, nieces, grandparents, maybe a great-grandparent, I don't know, in this work. Fresh young folks that are like, I just learned about arts and culture. Hopefully that can come in and do some things. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm excited to not be part of a pretentious project. I'm excited to be about something that just feels like breathing. Like, just talk, make some edits, have fun, open a bottle of champagne, enjoy, or some tea. And yeah, I'm excited to not have to perform for people. This is really great. I imagine a world where, like, orgs and communities and collectives do this type of work and they don't even have to think twice about a budget or anything. And then there's a lot of exciting things I can't talk about because we got to solidify some back-end details. But tune in to What Time Is It podcast. Check out our website, whattimeisitportraits.com.
Thanks for plugging it. I always forget about asking the question for plugging. So you did, that's great. That's going right in there. Great. I have one more question. It's just kind of a silly one to wind down. If you all were condiments, what condiments would you be?
That's a hard question, Percy.
I'm a hard-hitting journalist.
Rivka, are you? You froze for a second. I'll be gravy. Smother me on everything. Just smother me all over. Biscuits, sausages, bread. Just sop it up with the biscuit. Just gravy. Juicy, flavorful, a little viscous. Better when I'm hot. You can add water if it gets too thick to handle. Gravy.
See, I feel like I'm a mustard. Like I'm adaptable enough for most people, but some people don't really like. I'm from Chicago. Like don't really like mustard on things, but and some people really like mustard, aren't only mustard people. And so I really appeal to those people. But then but I could also be different kinds of mustards if I need to, right? Like I could be a grainy mustard, I could be a Dijon, I could be like a honey mustard, I could be these different types of mustards. Yeah, that's right. Russian Svavushka mustard. Yeah, that's the one. I was actually gonna say I'm horseradish, but that was like, that's a little bit too, it's like a little bit too, it's like too obscure maybe for, yeah. I'm like not that spicy. I'm like, that's why I'm like, feel like mustard. I'm too, I love horseradish. So I'm in that camp though.
I am definitely a pickle for sure. True to my roots. I grew up with so many pickled items, cucumbers, tomatoes, watermelon, radishes, cauliflower, you name it, it can be pickled. Fish. The stinkier and the funkier, the better. Yes, preservation in the archive, for real. That's what it is. What about you, Percy? What kind of condiment are you?
I'm a homemade mayonnaise. I'm not like a store-bought mayonnaise. I'm something that you make at home and you adjust it, the recipe accordingly, like day of. Thanks for asking.
You don't realize how much you need mayonnaise until you're choking on a sandwich. You know what I mean?
It's like if your sandwich is dry, you can't put mustard on it all the time because sometimes that just imbalances the sandwich. But mayonnaise, just like, it's just a little oily. Just a little tasty.
Choke sandwiches are a Chicago thing. I don't, y'all know about choke sandwiches, right? Choke sandwiches used to be, now I gotta talk to my mom about it, because it might have been a park program. But in the summer, Chicago would feed young people, and I think it might have been a park program. And they would serve these things called choke sandwiches. It was like a bologna or meat and cheese with white bread sandwich with no condiments. And they didn't have any condiments. It sounds like it was probably federally funded. But like, that's how my parents met over a choke sandwich on the south side of Chicago.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay.
it's like a hot dog without any condiments, which is like very antithetical to Chicago. Not a Chicago brand.
I know, like delis do that stuff sometimes. I'm just like, I remember I got a roast beef sandwich from, I don't remember where it was, some like deli in the southwest side. And I remember I was just like, this has no condiments on it. And they were just like, it's a roast beef sandwich. It's roast beef and onions. And I was like, that's not a sandwich. I'm going to die eating this. Great. I have nothing else for you all. And I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me. I'll send the questions that I have written down to Jay, and I really appreciate you all coming and talking to me again. And you can always email me if you have anything you want to follow up on. I'll make sure to send you all a copy of the article before it goes / interview before it goes out, so you can fact check and make sure that nothing is like super misinterpreted. Great. Have a good night, y'all.
Have a good one.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Yeah.